Due for
Tuesday, May 26, 2015, will now come to order. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Councilmember Combs?
Here.
Councilmember DeVries?
Here.
Councilmember Irby?
Here.
Councilmember Hansen?
Here.
Councilmember Best will not be at the 6 p.m. meeting. Deputy Mayor Carrington?
Here.
Mayor Johnson?
Here.
There's a quorum.
Next item is Pledge of Allegiance. Councilmember Combs, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item of business is audience participation. Time for anyone that would like to come forward to address the council for up to 3 minutes, 5 minutes. If you are representing a group, audience participation is now open. Seeing no one come forward, audience participation is now closed. And we have Committee of the Whole to discuss the wastewater treatment plant facility plan. Do we have a motion to move into the Committee of the Whole?
So move, Your Honor.
Second.
Made and seconded, Madam Clerk. We do not need a roll call vote, is that correct? Yes, okay. All those in favor moving in the Committee of the Whole, please signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say no. All right, by unanimous consent, we have moved in the Committee of the Whole. And that, Mr. Manager, would you like to give an introduction or an introduction of your staff?
Mayor and Council, can we ask that Tom Healy come up and introduce the work tonight?
Please.
Thank you. Tonight we have Ryan Myers and Murph O'Brien, both from HDR Engineers. The city hired a firm to do an update on our facility plan for the wastewater treatment facility. And they are a fair percentage into the project, and thought it would be a good idea to have them come and make a presentation to the council. And if there are any questions or issues that we need to discuss, we can do that.
So. All right, very good. So, HDR, welcome.
Thanks.
And I'm sorry, what was your name again?
That's Ryan Moyers.
All right, welcome.
Thanks for the opportunity to come and talk this evening. I just kind of want to give you an update of where we are in the update of your facility plan. Please feel free to stop me with any questions that you have as I'm going through this. I'm kind of hoping for more of a kind of a discussion and more of a meeting feel than me just kind of rolling through this PowerPoint. So please stop me at any time you have a question. I just need to hit this play button here. There we go. Do we need the mic? Here's the here's just kind of a kind of agenda of what we want to go through this evening. I want to start with some background and kind of go through some of the previous reports that have been done over the years and some of the options they looked at and discuss the objective with this update and specifically what we're looking to do. I want to go through the existing treatment system, get into the project need, specifically the regulatory drivers behind it, and the population growth, and take a look at some of those numbers. Then get into the design requirements, how we determine the flows and loads to use in our design, and then get into some of the alternatives we're currently evaluating for the facility upgrade. So this is pretty busy, but just kind of wanted to briefly roll through some of the past plans and some of the things that have occurred over the years. Back in 1999, 2000 time frame was when you first got your MPDES permit with ammonia limits. And around that time, a preliminary engineering report facility plan was done to kind of address what the facility would need to do to meet those ammonia limits. Those weren't terribly stringent back in those days. I think it was in the order of 30 milligrams per liter monthly average for the ammonia, which is still hard for a lagoon system to meet, but not terribly restrictive. 2007 was when you got your current permit, and that's when you got hit with the really low ammonia limits that you currently have and that are really challenging to meet for a lagoon system like yours. Around that time frame, 2008, another preliminary engineering report was done to take a look at how to meet those new low ammonia limits. I think they looked at seven alternatives back at that time, and recommendations were for some pretty significant upgrades to the facility to basically double the size and be able to meet the ammonia limits. In 2009, that kind of carried into the regional study with the borough and Wasilla, and included a little bit more analysis of the Palmer plant specifically. And at that time, a subsurface discharge option was looked at, and that was on the property just adjacent to the west, looking at discharging to a drain field on that property. 2010 kind of took a little different direction, and we're looking at building a greenhouse over the lagoons and covering portions of the lagoons and building a greenhouse and planting to address the ammonia. That one ended up not going too far. Coming out of that one, two of the lagoons did get covered though, and that's some of the most current work that's been done out at the plant. Our objectives, where they kind of differ from those previous reports, we're doing a fairly focused update. EPA has guidance on what they like to see for facility plans, which is a fairly prescribed document. Gets into demographics and a whole lot more detailed evaluation of the plant as far as electrical systems and mechanical systems and structural and things like that. We, given our scope, we have a much more focused goal, which is the ammonia removal, to try to bring the plant into compliance with the ammonia limits. One thing that the previous reports haven't really looked at too closely is how to phase those upgrades. They jumped from the current design numbers up to 2 MGD, or doubling the plant size, and not a whole lot of different phases to hit on the way up to that. So one of our goals is to try to come up with a more phased approach so we don't end up with stranded assets that we put a whole lot of money into it, and then years down the road we've built something too big that we didn't need. And then lastly, the permitting strategy. The regulatory environment now is pretty challenging. Other municipalities across the state are having similar problems as you guys. And as DEC is taking over from EPA, there's just some challenges in that. And one of the goals is to kind of lay out a long-term permitting strategy for you guys to kind of take into the future after this facility plan. Just briefly, here's your existing plant, a schematic of your plant. The influent wastewater comes in. You have two screw pumps that pump up to a screen facility with two auger monsters. From there, it flows into three aerated lagoons. Aerated lagoon 1 and 2 are covered. And then the third lagoon is more of a polishing lagoon. It's not covered. From there, the effluent goes through the UV disinfection and then into the stream and ultimately to the Matanuska River. Over time, sludge will build up on the bottom of the lagoons, and you need to the guys pump that out to a sludge drying area and add lime to it and let the sludge dry, and then ultimately just land apply it there at the plant. And that's a real simplistic schematic of your current plant. Here's just we've done a lot of compiling of your data over the last 5 to 10 years. Here's some different representations of the data that we've compiled. In the upper left is looking at your flow. The thing to notice here is it's there really hasn't been much of an increase in flow over the last 5 to 6 years. It's been a pretty steady number. You're at about 500,000 MGD coming into the plant. See, there's a little uptick in the last year, and I think that looked like there was some building picked up a little bit in this last year, and I think you see that uptick there in the flows. But in general, it's been pretty flat over the last 6 years. The next, over to the right, you have your effluent BOD and effluent TSS. Two of your major permit, typical major permit limits. You'll see that for the most part, I believe your average monthly average number is 30 milligrams per liter. For the most part, you don't have any trouble meeting your BOD and TSS limits. The lagoons are capable of fully capable of doing that, and that's typically what they're designed to do. So they're doing their job there. Bottom left is the influent and effluent temperature. Here you'll see over the last 6 years, this is extremely consistent data. You can see the seasons, and the temperatures don't really vary that much. I mean, it goes from up in the 12 degrees Celsius over the summer months down to about 7 degrees Celsius coming in. Covers were put on in 2010, I think the summer of 2010. They've impacted the temperatures, but I think they've kind of just shifted the seasons a little bit. We can kind of get into that when we get into a little bit more detail. But I think you're still out of compliance for the same time that you were before the covers went on. It's just kind of shifted what that time frame is. And then this last one is the effluent ammonia as related to temperature. This next slide shows that in a little bit more detail. The key to ammonia removal is nitrification. And your lagoons are great at BOD and TSS removal. And it's a little bit more challenging to get nitrification in them. That's not typically what they're designed for, especially in cold regions. So kind of the general rule of thumb is once the wastewater drops below 5 degrees Celsius, you're not going to be able to nitrify. The bugs that do the nitrification typically don't work down below 5 degrees Celsius. So you can see as your influent temperatures drop down, I guess it's your effluent temperatures, the maroon in the background. Once you drop down below that 5 degrees, you'll see that your ammonia removal is non-existent. Nitrification is kind of an on-off. You're either doing it or you're not.
I think with the fans and all the crap.
You drag it closer.
There we go. So you see, during the summer, there's a span of 3 or 4 months where you are nitrifying and you're basically down to almost no ammonia going out of the plant. The trick is that, I mean, that's 3 or 4 months. The rest of the year, once the when the effluent temperatures are down, then it's just hard to hit those nitrification numbers. So that's what we're focusing on. Here's your current permit limits. BOD and TSS, as I said, 30 milligrams per liter for each of those. You meet those without too much trouble. Those are fairly typical numbers. Your ammonia numbers are the ones that are restrictive and some of the lowest in the state. For July and August in your spawning season, your average monthly number is 1.7 milligrams per liter, which is extremely hard to do with your lagoon system. And the rest of the year is 8.7 milligrams per liter, which is also hard given your current system. One of the things that your 2007 permit required you to do is take additional samples in the receiving stream. When EPA calculated your permit back in 2007, they used the water quality standard calculations for the ammonia limits. But they didn't have a whole lot of in-stream data. So they used a couple points they had for upstream. I think there's a USGS data collection site upstream. They used a couple points from that as far as river background information, and then they made assumptions beyond that to come up with your limits. So one of the things they required in your 2007 permit was for your operators to start on a monthly basis getting more background data for what you're, for the receiving waters that you're putting your effluent into. Originally, we were hoping, because EPA made a lot of assumptions and didn't have a whole lot of data, that was going to be an opportunity to come in and ask for them to recalculate the permit limits. And initially, it looked like that was going to be a really good opportunity, because it looked like they had an error in their calculation. I'll get into here in the next slide. But basically, off to the right here is kind of is where we've compiled the data that your operators have collected since 2007 in that receiving stream. They've been collecting pH and temperature, background levels of ammonia in the receiving waters, pH, fecal coliforms, all these things in the little side stream that you discharge to, as opposed to the main channel that they used in their original calculations. So table one and table two represent the analysis that we did. We calculated a number of different scenarios looking at potential opportunities to go to DEC and, you know, look at annual limits, look at different seasonal limits, different ways that we might calculate the permit limits that you might get a little less restrictive numbers out of it. Like I said, when we first started in the calculations, it looked like EPA had an error in their original calculations, which would give you a little bit of a leniency. Beyond that, things got a little bit more dicey. In some cases, it looks like there's an opportunity to get less restrictive permit limits at times of the year, but then in other cases it looks like you're going to get hit with even more restrictive permit limits. The big culprits here are the receiving water pH and the flow in the receiving stream. The numbers that EPA used originally, they actually used a much higher flow rate based on an assumption of percentage of flow from the main channel. And the data that you've collected in the side stream since 2007 shows that it's a whole lot less flow than what they used. And then the numbers they assumed for background pH in the receiving stream were lower than what you're actually detecting or sampling in the receiving stream. So pH is has a huge impact on that ammonia calculation. So the fact that those numbers are higher than what EPA used originally is ultimately could result in more restrictive ammonia limits. It does look like over the summer time frame that there's a possibility for entering into some discussions with DEC to maybe try to use 100% effluent for the calculations, which would give you the opportunity to maybe do some pH control on your effluent. You could actually add some acid or do something to control the pH as it's leaving the plant. And if, depending on discussions with DEC, if you could get a certain percentage of your effluent used in that calculation, it would give you some help in that permit number. Bottom line is the regulatory issues are challenging. There's a lot of different scenarios that could play out depending on what DEC decides to do for their water quality standards as they take that over from EPA. It gets even more challenging when you take into account that there's a new round of national ammonia criteria that was just released last year. This figure off to the right with the map shows shows the regions that are probably going to be most affected by the latest criteria. The criteria has to do with a mussel species, which probably isn't up here and probably wouldn't impact your plant, but it's just something to be aware of that, you know, limits become more and more restrictive with each passing permit. So it's something to be aware of. It's probably not going to affect you, but you know, it's out there.
So what you're saying is there's some kind of freshwater clam that is affected by the ammonia, or am I completely missing this?
Mussel, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
And like I said, I mean, this map shows that there are 1 to 4 species in Alaska and probably not in your area, but, you know, it's potentially an impact depending on how DEC and EPA want to handle it. Another real issue are metals, which aren't currently in your permit, but at plants around the state that discharge to waters similar to yours, to anadromous streams where salmon are spawning, they are getting hit with metals limits for copper and zinc. So I think it's something that we need to be aware of that's potentially in the next round of permit limits. And just something, we'll make some recommendations as far as data maybe to collect leading up to it. But it's something to just be cognizant of. It's not really easy to treat. And municipalities across the state are kind of butting heads with DEC now about how to address the copper and zinc issues. One recommendation that will come out of the facility plan is that there are other municipalities that are in pretty much your same boat. Anchorage's Girdwood plant, Soldotna, both discharge to very similar streams and have similar permit limits. As DEC is kind of developing their water quality standards, and they take their water quality based effluent limits from EPA, it might not be a bad idea to get with these other municipalities and see about developing a coalition might not be the right word, but kind of talking with municipalities across the state to see if you can have an impact and have a say as DEC takes on these responsibilities. Okay, switching gears to population growth. You'll notice the top two lines are well above the rest of it. Those are based on the 2005 ICER numbers and the Kibata Bridge estimates. Those have been the numbers that have been used for the past couple reports. And were basically what was leading to a recommendation to double the size of the plant over the next 20 years, or to go ahead and double the size of the plant to address this growth. The line to the left with the markers is your historical flow since 2002. You'll see that it's been steady but kind of slow growth. The yellow line extending out from that is just an extension of that historical growth line. So if you maintain the same growth as that you've seen since 2002, that's where you'll hit. Interestingly, the purple line is based on the growth rates from the recently published Department of Labor. So they've, I think 2014, they put out some new numbers. They pretty closely match the historical projection. The green line is a projection based on past census population. So what this is showing is that 2MGD number that's kind of been used to size things and to as the recommended flow for your facility, I think is maybe a little higher than what we need to go. So when we start looking at phasing, it looks like within the next 20 years, we can actually start with the current design flows and then look to phase at smaller intervals to get up to, I mean, ultimately, you'll probably get to that 2MGD, but it looks like it'll be smaller intervals that'll get you there and a slower growth than what was originally anticipated. So that's good news in terms of capital cost and being able to phase it to get to where you need. To get to our design requirements, we did a probability analysis of your flows and loads at the plant. Over the last 5 years, we took the plant data, we looked at the seasonal differences, we looked at the flows and loads over the summer, and then compared those to the flows and loads over the winter. We did a log normal analysis, which is typical for a wastewater treatment plant, kind of flows and loads analysis. And then the two tables at the bottom represent what you currently are seeing at the plant. So your average flow, there's really not a whole lot of difference between your summer and winter numbers in terms of flows and loading. So what you're seeing is about 500,000 gallons per day coming into the plant. And really not, as far as your max months and max days, you're really not seeing high peaking factors. So there's really not a whole lot of inflow or infiltration coming into the system. It's a pretty tight system. Everything out, your TSS and BOD loading, TKN, all that is fairly typical of wastewater treatment plant loads. So then we took those numbers and applied those to future design conditions. So based on the growth, we're using your current design capacity of 1MGD as our design condition number one. And then we're, instead of making the leap to 2MGD, the next design condition we're looking at is a 1.5 MGD. So a little smaller jump and a little more phased approach to get to the next design condition. We take these design loads and we've sent those out to the vendors and doing our calculations, and that's how we get into the alternatives evaluation. The two, I guess, based on the regulatory analysis, there are a lot of different possibilities that we could be looking at for permit limits. Having to pick several to be able to do the analysis, we're using your current permit limits, so the 8.7 and 1.7, and then we're using a much more restrictive 1.7 all year. So one of the calculations we did looked like, worst case, you could potentially get hit with a really low limit on an annual basis. So that's the second design condition we're looking at. Getting into the alternatives analysis, I just want to briefly go over some of the alternatives that have been looked at in the past. You can see there's been a number of them. Conventional activated sludge, lagoon activated sludge, IFAS, sequencing batch reactors, all of these are mechanical plants that have been evaluated in the past. Moving bed biofilm reactors, then the greenhouse alternative. Some mechanical options some things that weren't mechanical options that were looked at was the 2008 study looked at relocating the outfall from your current position and moving it out to the main channel. That one didn't pencil out. They also looked at doing a percolation cell out in the floodplain. That one also didn't pencil out. It looked like it was going to be fairly costly and not easy construction out in the floodplain. And then they also looked at the drain field option on the adjacent property to the west of the current property. With all those, like I said, they all used the high design flow numbers. They all used that 2 MGD flow number, which resulted in some pretty high anticipated project cost. I think it was $30 to $50 million was the numbers for all those alternatives, which is pretty prohibitive and hard to just jump into. They really didn't look at kind of limited phasing opportunities with all those different options, and they really didn't look at potentially more stringent effluent limits. They just looked at the 2007 limits, or the ones that you currently have to meet. So, based on the design, flows and loads, and based on the anticipated regulatory environment, we've narrowed it down to four alternatives, two of which are mechanical upgrades to the plant to kind of use what you have and kind of phase in upgrades. That's the moving bed biofilm reactors and the SAGR attached growth reactor. Both of those, the goal would be to treat the effluent to meet the permit limits. The other two alternatives we're looking at are potential opportunities to get away from your current discharge permit to see if there's other opportunities to discharge your wastewater where you don't have to deal with those extremely restrictive ammonia limits. So one of those options is reuse land application. The other is subsurface discharge, not over in the area that was looked at originally, but looking to actually discharge it on the wastewater treatment plant property and in the bluff area and in the floodplain area just below the treatment plant property. So with the reuse and land application alternative, we're currently looking in an area about 15 miles from the wastewater plant, looking at things like crop types, land areas, effluent storage requirements, and on each piece of property, looking at things like topography, groundwater depth, soil type, accessibility, land ownership, and just trying to narrow it down to some of the best options to look at a little closer. One of the most attractive things is the permitting. It would alleviate your current APDES. You wouldn't have as restrictive limits as you do discharging to the stream. It hasn't been widely done in Alaska. I think they do it a little bit in Fairbanks, but it just hasn't been widely done. Partly, I think, because it's a seasonal option. You can't do it during the winter. But it's definitely an option to look at in terms of alleviating the discharge situation over the summer months. So, sure.
So when you talk about reuse land application, are you talking about pumping the discharge somewhere else to another piece of property?
Yeah. The treated effluent.
Okay.
Pumping or storing and trucking, but most likely pumping.
Okay. And so discharging in the main channel of the river is still prohibitive to that?
We will see. We will see. It will be more prohibitive in that you'll have similar ammonia limits, and if the land application option looks like it's viable, you'll have less restrictive discharge permit limits to meet.
And you said you couldn't do that in the winter for the land application?
Right.
So what do you store it till summertime, or
that's one of the issues we'll have to work through is either do kind of a dual discharge system where you land apply when you can, and then you discharge like you currently do the rest of the time, or we'll look at the storage requirements that would be needed to just store it when you can't land apply. And then, I mean, options we've looked at in the past have looked at snowmaking too. So I mean, there's options in the winter too, but it's more likely that it's a summertime activity, and then we figure out what to do during the winter when you can't do it.
Yeah. There might be some that's useful, because we're getting into a drone. We may be missing something, but you could add, and maybe Tom, that on Friday we got, and this plays right in here, we got notified EPA of their intent to enforce ammonia regulations, and those carry fines with them that are pretty significant if we can't meet the ammonia standards that we're talking about. So later on, if you want to do it now or later, either way, I think Tom or HDR can put a little sense when they're saying why it's so important that we deal with the ammonia, even if looking at, you know, transporting stuff because of the cost.
Can I just get back a little bit to the...
I just wanted to ask how much... We're at 6:30 right now, and about how long do you have in your report? Yeah, if we can get maybe, but if I understand this right, do we get through this report, and then we need to have an update on what you're talking about? Is that you'd like to do? Yes, okay. So if we can get this finished up in about the next, probably if we can hit the high points in the next 10 minutes, and we can have about 10 minutes probably to talk about it. Councilor Hansen, yeah, go ahead. All right.
With the subsurface discharge, as I mentioned, this option wouldn't be on the adjacent property. It wouldn't be a drain field. I know that a concern back when that was looked at originally was that it was fairly close to a neighborhood well there. This would be a different approach. Either injection wells or a drain field type arrangement on the wastewater treatment plant property, with the idea of flowing into the hyperreic zone down below the wastewater treatment plant. The hyperreic zone is kind of the saturated zone that leads into the stream. This was actually recommended by DEC back in 2008 as an alternative to look at. And some preliminary work was done. This figure off here to the right was kind of some very preliminary work that was done with DEC back in those days. That kind of got lost in the regional study when the 2-MGD flow was used. So I think it's really an option to give a whole lot closer look to go back knowing that we don't necessarily need to hit that 2-MGD number. There's definitely an opportunity for some less restrictive limits when you look at subsurface on the site as opposed to discharging to the stream. Some concerns with that, though, we'd be dealing with the bluff and the floodplain area. We need to definitely look at the structural stability of the bluff and make sure we're not causing problems there. And I get something to keep in the back of our minds is that currently would not need an MPDDS permit. It would be treated by DEC as a subsurface discharge. But EPA has, in other areas, in Oregon, for instance, they've come in and said, whoa, that is basically a surface discharge. So something to keep in the back of our minds that DEC currently would regulate it as a subsurface, but EPA would be watching how that was treated. But it's definitely a viable option to look at for not having to keep your current discharge.
I'm sorry, could you just say that again? You said that was a viable option. EPA would be watching DEC, but sorry, I didn't catch exactly what you said.
As it is currently, it wouldn't be permitted as a surface discharge. DEC would permit it as a subsurface discharge. In other areas, EPA, where plants have discharged into the hyperreic zone, EPA has come in and said, we think that's actually surface water. It's not a subsurface discharge. So currently DEC would permit it as a subsurface, which would give you pretty good leniency on your limits. But knowing that in other areas, EPA has come in and stepped in on those. The two mechanical options we are looking at further are the MBBR. It's an attached growth system. It's attractive because of the small footprint and expandability and phaseability. With that small footprint, typically comes a smaller price tag, which is why it's one of the more attractive mechanical options. The other is also an attached growth system. This one has real potential. It was developed by Nelson Environmental specifically for cold water nitrification. They developed it in Manitoba. It has a lot of Canadian applications. It has a lot of lower 48 applications in cold weather environments. It's designed, as you can see, for water down as cold as 0.5 degrees Celsius. So they have a lot of data, and they have a lot of, I think they have 200 to 300 installations now. It's fairly new, but it's a growing technology, and it's showing that it can get down to the ammonia levels that we would need to get down to here. So here's basically what it looks like. Off on the right is kind of a 3D version of how it goes. The flow would come in from basically up at the reactor, the word reactor, and then flow across the unit. It's made up of gravel media as opposed to the plastic media that's used in the mechanical type plants. So they would use gravel from the area. The biofilm basically builds on the gravel. It's a little different than like the old trickling filters where it was a gravel media too, but it would trickle down through. This is a flow through. So flow would basically go across the bed and work in that manner. Here's just a sample of the data. You can see that for their total ammonia, for wastewater temperatures down to 0.3, it's capable of getting down to a ammonia discharge of 0.12, which is pretty impressive. So this is an option we're definitely looking at closely. It orders of magnitude less cost than the 30 to 50 million that was out there before. So shall we talk about the
About 5 more minutes probably, or
any questions on the four options we're looking at?
So you're on it. Yes, go ahead. Thank you. You said it would be less than the 30 to 50 million, but I mean, is that like 25 million for this last, or 15 or 10, or do you have any estimates at all?
Below 10.
Below 10? Oh, that's impressive. Okay,
so orders of magnitude lower.
Pardon, I'm sorry.
Orders of magnitude lower than the 30 to 50.
Okay, great. Thank you. Your Honor, can I ask another question? Have you personally viewed this system anyplace, or have you just learned about this?
We're going on the data.
Okay.
One thing we've discussed is going potentially with the operators to go view some of the systems.
Is there any place in the United States that's been used? You said, Manitoba, is that where it's used now?
There's a lot in Canada. There's a lot in the Dakotas, Montana.
Okay.
Some cold regions there,
okay.
Minnesota.
Okay, great. Thank
you. Sure.
Now, are these proprietary systems? I mean, are they?
This one was developed by Nelson Environmental.
And they would be, would they have to be the ones that did certain types of install or certain types of maintenance?
They wouldn't do the install. I think they come and oversee. They do inspection to make sure it's done.
But they provide
per their spec. But they would provide the inspector. But it would be built by a local contractor using local gravel and local materials. We would do the design with them, and then they would provide an inspector to make sure it would meet their specs.
Your Honor?
Councilmember DeVries.
Thank you. Do we have ample land there at the present site to do that?
That's part of the current evaluation.
So you haven't evaluated that then completely. Is that what you're saying to me? You have not evaluated that completely to determine if we would need additional land at the present site? Or am I misunderstanding you?
We've looked at the two MGD. We haven't stepped back and looked at the one and the one and a half. At the two MGD, you would need some additional land.
Okay.
To fit the reactors in there. I don't know yet for the current design flow and the 1.5 MGD design flow.
Okay. And so that would give us the growth that you projected there on the 2 or the 1.5?
I'm sorry, please add it in.
Would it, on the projected growth that you had for, you know, the next, say, 15 years or so, would that you're still analyzing whether we have enough land for that then. Is that correct?
When we talked to them originally, we looked at the 2 MGD option just to get an idea of what it would look at, what it would look like. And for that option, it would definitely require some more land.
More land, right.
But having gone back and looked at the probability of hitting that 2 MGD, we're now looking at the 1 MGD and the 1.5. And I don't know yet exactly how much land is going to be required for those.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Hanson?
Yeah. So, you know, Tom probably can remember better, but 2004 or 5, whatever, we looked at land to the east as opposed to the west. Have you evaluated the east at all as for a subsurface discharge?
That would kind of be considered as part of that bluff area. And that's also... If we do need to look at that would kind of be one of the areas we'd look at.
I guess I was under the impression that this is what this report would tell us, is whether we could needed to purchase the additional land or if and where, and because we have some monies to do that.
That'll be part of our recommendations. With each of the options, will additional land be required, and how much, and possibilities for where to do it.
All right, and Councilmember DeVries, did you have a question?
I was just going to ask, and when do we expect that? Will you?
We're hoping to wrap up the report by the end of June.
June this year.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Manager, did you want to talk about?
Well, only simply that. So the one thing that's changed is that on Friday we got notice from the EPA and saying that basically they want us to comply with the ammonia standards. And you saw that timeline up there that we've been dealing with this for quite a while. So it's a little bit of a change where they're saying do it now. And with that, if we're out of compliance, then there is a fine per day that's assigned. So as they tell us that in one document, the same thing, then they said, but we're interested, or we're offering to you a negotiation where we can work out the timeline, knowing that this report is coming, also knowing that there's other cities that are dealing with similar things to what we've had. And so they call it a tolling agreement that says they're willing to enter into a negotiating period, but they gave us basically 14 days to say, if you're ready to go into negotiation with us, we'll give you a 14-day breather. If not, then we start talking about potential litigation, you know, or enforcement of the fines. So that's the thing that's changed from last and the 22nd.
When did we get the letter?
22nd of May.
Mr. Gaddy.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, thank you. To supplement the manager's comments, the tolling agreement requires that the signer, the person who executes the agreement, certifies they have authority to do that, so there may be some need for the council to direct the manager to do that if they're so inclined to have that agreement signed. And secondly, probably need further examination of the terms and conditions of the tolling agreement as well, which I think that's sort of a second step. But the first step would be to at least give the manager authority to sign it so that that can move forward, because the 14 days will expire pretty quickly. So anyway, that's sort of a snapshot of this, and I don't know if the manager or the clerk has had a chance to forward the correspondence to the council, but that's probably something that eventually will be coming your way.
Mr. Manager, do you have that correspondence?
We do. It hasn't been forwarded yet, and we can do that this evening and put it on the table.
Do we need to take action then during this meeting, since that's what the agenda's on? Can we just give them verbal authorization, or how's that going?
I would suggest at least that, and also authorize them to negotiate that agreement, that tolling agreement. So verbal authorization, and secondly, authorization to negotiate the tolling agreement, which I'll restate requires further examination.
If we could have that as a motion, that would be.
We'll see that after we come on the committee poll.
Thank you.
Excuse me? I'm just going to take a brief moment here and have the attorney write up the motion that he'd like to hear. Yeah. The proposed, okay. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and make this motion. That's the motion, we're going to come out of the committee of the whole. And I'd like to make a motion to authorize the manager to negotiate and execute the proposed EPA tolling agreement. And a second. Yeah, I made that motion.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of that authorization, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say no. All right, we've by unanimously approved the authorizing the city manager to negotiate and execute that tolling agreement. And with no further business in this special meeting, this meeting is adjourned.